Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Togru.
Glad to be back. Did I miss last week? I believe I did. I've been missing a lot lately, and that's okay. I'm here. And yeah, we got an action-packed episode, huh?
We do. Midweek football is back. The days of one recap and one preview are done for the foreseeable. And I forgot to get the Substack list up. Don't shout at me. Here we go. Des Winter, McGlynn, Ali Tarine, Tito Mack, Moritz Polman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, MJ and Mats, Luke Villano, Raul Escobar. Thank you, as always, for being our Substack founding members. Last week, on last week's episode, we got up sort of a little bit of an overview of how the Substack's been looking in recent days and weeks, and the kind of thing that you can expect if you become a subscriber over there. So go and check that out if you want a little bit of a teaser. As a reminder, you can do 7 days for free. So if you're just wanting to sort of see how a week cycle works on there with the bonus content that we do, that includes deep dives. This week, one of the more unique things that we've had out is a bit of a Sempre Milan origin story, because a lot of people have asked how the brand and the website came to be. So it goes all the way back to 2016, and a rogue trip to Milan and a derby win that launched everything from there. So that might interest some people. As I said, yeah, you can do a week free trial and see how things look. And we appreciate everybody who has subscribed and shown us support. Let's dive in then. Sunday night, I don't know.
Napoli, there we go.
The elongation there was a bit rogue. Yeah, Napoli at home. They'd kind of had our number at San Siro in recent seasons, at least in the league, to the extent that we hadn't actually beaten them in Serie A at home since 2014. The 2014-15 season, to be precise, when Menez and Bonaventura scored in a 2-0 win for us. It had been a long time coming, but we managed to get the job done. The narrative coming into this game was well known, I think. That is that we're doing better in terms of league form. There's no two ways about it. You know, we've stabilized after another sort of dark period that came in the October, particularly November months. And we've done well since that loss against Atalanta in December. However, the fact remains that we're still, if Inter win their game in hand, we'll be 11 points behind them. It feels like it's going to be difficult to catch them. Juve have given us a glimmer. You know, we're a point behind them now with the same amount of games played because they're wobbling. However, no matter how much negative press there's been surrounding us and our season, it's not been as bad as Napoli's. They have been in chaos.
where are they at? Are they 25 points off top right now? They yes, sure are. Yeah.
17 off us.
Yeah, 17 off us, 25 off the top. I mean, look, they're bad. That said, I think they played better than us on Sunday. In fact, I watched the highlights again last night just because I was like, oh, you know, we won. Let me watch those highlights. Our only highlight was the goal. The rest were them missing chances that should have went in, or the Simic own goal that didn't go in, that hit the post.
I nearly called that. When he came on, I said, this has Simic own goal written all over it, and it nearly happened.
Yeah, it was scary. But that whole narrative, I just want to go back to it about, you know, them beating us at San Siro or us not being able to beat them since 2014 in the league. Like, there's too many layers to that to say it's a legitimate or valuable stat, you know. Yes, we had not beat them at home in the league since 2014. That's true. But we'd beat them plenty of times since 2014, and we beat them at home plenty of times since 2014, just not in the league. You know, as recent as 2019, we had beat them in the cup at home. We beat them in the Champions League at home last season. We've drawn with them at home multiple times as well, too. So it's not like we were just losing there. And then, yeah, I mean, we're now 5 games unbeaten against them, I believe. So,
yeah, it'll
it
be,
is what
it'll
it is.
Be.
Like, I don't know, this myth that Napoli is just our bogey team is at home, at least. I don't buy into it. You know, there obviously was a run of unlucky ones at home, but the reality is we've beaten them every single season for the last 5 years, at least one time, you know. So, it's
yeah, it's
whatever.
Like you've got to put a couple of filters on the stat, basically. It's not like we haven't beaten Napoli in this. It's in, at home in the league. You know, there's a couple of added caveats to it. And as you say, we've actually come out on top in the more important recent matchups. There's no two ways about it. That 4-0 against the champions elect at their place. Obviously, we won over two legs in the Champions League. You mentioned that cup game when I think Piontek announced himself as a Milan player. That was his debut, I want to say. And the 1-0 away from home in the Scudetto season that again swung the momentum in our favour. Like, we have had the better of the more important games, but it's still something you want to get off your back, you know. 10 years is a long time. And the whole point of that narrative, sort of building it up before we talk about the game itself, I think, is to point out that this game wasn't as comfortable as we'd have hoped for. You know, the build-up to the game was sort of dominated by the local Naples press saying that Mazzarri's kind of lost the plot and he's switching systems again to a 3-5-1-1. And sort of to put it in perspective, it's like Pioli doing the same, but moving Leao behind the striker. You know, he moved Kvara essentially to try and get him in a bit sort of more free space and drag players with him, that kind of thing. So he tried to reinvent what they're good at for this particular game. And we were able to, you know, aside from Reinders, who was suspended, field a fairly consistent lineup. And they didn't have Osimhen. And they didn't have Mario Rui either. So they had a lot of stuff to figure out coming into this. And they tweaked a fair bit. And you hope that us, with the good run that we've been on, defensively we'd been shaky, but we've been outscoring opponents. You hope that it would be a bit more of a controlling victory. And control was the buzzword of last week's episode. It remains so. It didn't feel like a controlling win in any way, to be honest. I think they had the better of the chances, although big chances says 2-0 in our favour. I think XG is in our favour a bit as well. But it did feel like they were the better side leading up to our goal, to be honest, as well. You know, they'd had the opening 20 minutes in their favour, and we looked a little bit shaky. We couldn't string passes together. And then it's almost as if they just got a bit too overconfident. Rahman, who's the middle centre-back for them, and we're going on to our goal here, but it's all we've really got to go on in the first half. Rahmani, their middle centre-back, gets dragged out by Giroud, who's over playing on the left side for us, pings a nice little ball out, and we catch them perhaps a bit overconfident because they left too much space behind. And that proved to be the decisive moment, the one moment of quality in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that was, like I said, that was the one moment. They had a chance in the 9th minute from Simeone, who really should have put it away. It was right in front of goal, and he just went wide. That's been the story of their away games, right? I'm checking now because I know that they hadn't their away games. 5
in a row without scoring.
5 in a row without a goal in an away game, which is crazy because it was only our second clean sheet of 2024, the other being the 3-0 Empoli victory in the beginning of January. as difficult as this game looked compared to some of the others we've won this calendar year already, we actually got the clean sheet in this one. And, you know, maybe it's just the way we want to play up against Napoli now after last season and you know, the 4 games we had to play, the way the fan bases were going at each other, like, just it meant something to the team. I don't know what it is, but they seem to really rise up to the occasion for Napoli now. The one goal, like you said, I mean, it was incredible pass from Leao. This is, again, further proof. I mentioned a few weeks back that I'm forgetting the name of that stat that I mentioned, but there's a stat that shows why Leao is still effective and why he's still one of the best in the league. He leads the league in that stat about
it was like expected threat or something like that.
Yeah, expected threat, I think, is what
it wasn't
was.
Quite expected assists, but I think it was expected threat. Yeah.
Yeah, which expected threat. And he led it by a good margin, I believe. And again, I mean, he created it.
I've got more stats.
Yeah,
if you want them.
I do.
So this came out today. DataMB is a brilliant follow. If you don't follow him, he does some fantastic stuff. And he tends to post stuff that's like, for example, in this tweet he put, this is the underperforming Leao. So he picks up on what people are saying and then finds the stuff that disproves it, which I quite like. So this is where Leao ranks against other wingers in Serie A for per 90 stats. He's top in assists, top in key passes, top in crosses, second in touches inside the box, second in progressive runs, second in successful attacking actions, third in dribbles, and third in aerial duels won. So he's basically elite in eight categories there. Yeah, near enough everything that you... Of course, you'd like to see goals in there, given what we've seen from him in the last two seasons. Apart from that, though, you know, it's looking pretty good. And Pioli has spoken in the media, both before and after games, about how this is kind of a new Leao we're seeing, where, like, he's not really feeling the pressure of having to score. Like, when it comes, it will come. And we shouldn't act like he wasn't very close to getting a goal in this game as well. Gollini made an amazing save. He did waste a couple of chances after that, or maybe one was before, I can't remember. But still, you know, it wasn't like everything was wild and he wasn't close to scoring. But yeah, we're just seeing a Leao that's picking the best option in the situation. You know, in that particular position where he picked up the ball for the assist to Teo, it's near the halfway line, hugging the touchline. He couldn't really be further away from being the man to finish that chance, you know, in terms of, however... it was a smart team play. Giroud made a nice... We've said about his first-time flicks and his passes don't often come off. He made a lovely first-time pass out to Leao. Teo, you know, and gets him behind, scores the goal, obviously. Gollini, I don't know about his pursuit angle there. It seemed a bit off to me, to be honest, to be able to get it to slot under him like that. But Matsari said after the game as well, like, we prepared all week for that exact move. And they didn't pick up on it. I think that's Napoli in a nutshell, you know. Mm-hmm. I can understand the frustration of their fans. But yeah, Leao was really good on that goal.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Just one of our best players yet again. You mentioned, you know, the missed chances. He had a few of them as well. But he did make one decision, which I think showed his fear of taking a shot right now. It was towards the end of the game. And it was, I believe, either Jovic or... Jovic made the through ball, and Leao received it. And he was just slightly offside, but the whistle hadn't been blown yet. But he was running down one-on-one, essentially. I think there was, like, one defender, but he beat them. Mm-hmm. And instead of taking the shot one-on-one against Gollini, who, let's be real, wasn't having the best game, he decided to make the through ball pass to Teo across face of goal. And it got intercepted by Rachmani or whomever it was. But that was a moment where I thought, maybe Leao is in his head a little bit about his goal scoring, about his drought.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally he takes that. We've seen him make that run, side foot it, bottom net.
Little dingo. We've seen him score those goals against Napoli, you know, that 4-0 in particular. The first goal of that game was where he got put through. Keeper comes out. He's taken a little bit wide by it, but he just dinks it over the onrushing goalkeeper. And then he scored another really good goal where he got in down the left side of the box and hammered it inside the far corner. That chance you're talking about, the offside flag went up because it did look like he was given, you know, the freedom of Milan to do what he wanted there. But the replay showed that I think he was on. So it actually it was very close, at least.
It had to have been very close. Live, I thought it was off. When they showed the replay, they didn't put the lines, and I was like, that's much closer than it looked to me.
Yeah, so if it ends a goal, it's one of those where the linesman only flagged afterwards as well, so he wasn't certain about it. Mm-hmm. He waits for the chance to develop. Then when the ball's cleared, the flag goes up. That's now the protocol, you know, is what it is. But yeah, when they showed the replay, they showed it from a bit of an angle where you couldn't really see down the straight line. It was like the halfway line angle, but I was thinking that was closer. So then maybe that is a wasted opportunity. Maybe other broadcasts showed other angles, and I'm totally wrong about that. But yeah, you're right. I think it did show. We did show something, you know, I think it's just killer instinct that's missing. And we know that he's got it in him because we saw that in the Scudetto season. We saw that last season when his totals went up and up. We have seen that killer instinct when he gets into positions like that. And he always seems to know the right finish, as weird as it looks. And then in that case, where it seemed so much more obvious to shoot than pass, I don't even think Teo would have beefed at him for taking the shot on there.
No,
because Teo was ultimately dragging his man across to create the space rather than anything else. And 2 week a pass and unfortunately didn't come off.
But all that said, you mentioned his totals of the Scudetto winning season. At this point, 24 games played in the Scudetto winning season, Leao was on 10 goal assist. Right now, Leao is on 10 goals and assist. So, I mean, he's still right there. He's just, the type of plays are changing. He's three goals, seven assists. And obviously he has three goals in the other competitions as well, Champions League and the Cup, and probably we'll get some in the Europa League later, who knows. But that goes to show how valuable it is having a guy like Christian Pulisic or Chukwueze over people like Macias and Alexis Salamakers. You know, we have a right winger who is putting in goals, putting in assists. He's actually contributing. And like you said, it's taking that pressure off Liao, because Liao's still double, triple covered. So mm-hmm. he knows that he can make those creative plays and get the ball to Pulisic if he needs to and restart on that side. And Pulisic's good enough that he could create plays on his own as well. So, you know, overall, the team's still clicking. I think it's just unfortunate our table position, and most of it likely comes down to defensive errors, right? You know, the injuries, and you look at all the draws that we've had that are shouldn't have been draws. The 2-2 against Napoli, 2-2 Lecce, 2-2 Salernitana. What's the other one? There was another draw that was a silly draw to get, but if we write those wrongs, Bologna, which was a penalty, you know, in stoppage time. So you write those wrongs, and those were all wins as they originally were going to be until the last second there. What does that become? 8 extra points, and now all of a sudden we're 1 point off the top, you know? Like, it's a whole different Scudetto season. It's a whole different ball game if we were able to get those by. And I do think we could have had we not have had 6 defenders out, you know?
It's crazy. And every man out, yeah.
For all of our injuries the last 3 seasons, being Maignan for long periods of time, this is, of course, the season that he's in the whole time, and everyone who's meant to protect him is out. So now his stats look worse because the line in front of him to protect him hasn't been there. So yeah. It's frustrating as a fan, but, you know, we move. At least we got the big win over Napoli.
Yeah, put that in the trophy cabinet. Yeah, I mean, the second half was a strange one, wasn't it? Like, he made a change at halftime, Massari, where he took off Ostergaard and he put on Politano, and it was a pretty clear change back to a four-man defence. But we had them on the ropes early in that second half. Like, they seemed to struggle with the system change, and we were all over them. Like, it felt like in the 2-2 draw earlier in the season, where in that first half, they just couldn't get out of the half. You know, we were pressing well. They were coughing up possession. We were winning the ball back in dangerous areas. Bennacer and Liao, you know, had a couple of chances in those early exchanges. And we didn't get that second goal when we were on top, which I think would have made it a lot more comfortable evening.
There was a really good chance by Florenzi where he just shot it at the keeper, and he kind of spilled it a little bit.
Yeah.
And Giroud got actually a touch on it afterwards to tap it in, but the Gallini's hands are still there. Florenzi made the wrong call on that. You know, if it goes in, everyone forgives him, obviously, but he had time and space to pass it to Giroud, who was more central. And look, I for every criticism I throw at Giroud, who do I want taking a shot from near the penalty spot more, Giroud or the backup right back? I'm going Giroud, you know? So
yeah.
I think he made the wrong decision. It almost worked out for him and all would have been forgiven. But those are just those little tweaks that we got to work on to really be that fine-tuned, well-oiled machine that we can be. Because we see we have the players for it. But that's the difference between us and Inter. Inter's not making the wrong decision 9 times out of 10. You know, we're doing it maybe 5-6 times out of 10. And we're still putting in as many goals as them, or just about. I think we're only a few shy. I don't know what the difference in goals is right now, but I know we have the second best attack in the league behind them, and it's just slightly behind. So if we could start making those right chances, then I think we'd be putting in a lot more goals, because they've been there. The opportunities have been there, and we've made a lot of mistakes, a lot of wrong choices, even in this game, a game we won against, you know, let's be honest, a big competitor, the reigning champions, regardless of if they've been shitty this season, they're still a great team. We should have put away more chances, and we had them. We had the opportunity.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, in particular in that period, and it allowed them, I think once they'd weathered the storm, it allowed them to come back into it a bit. Another thing that didn't really help for us in terms of continuity was the fact that the right side of the defense had to go off. Obviously, Calabria goes off in the first half. Florenzi actually did okay, to be honest. And he made a really, really good stop in the second half to deny Kvaratskhelia after
he fully covered Kjaer's ass.
Fully blew past Kjaer. And I don't understand it because Kjaer, minutes before that particular incident, had come all the way out to the right touchline and produced a brilliant sliding tackle, you know, but he shouldn't really be out there, let's be honest. And it was almost for sure kind of thing, but I'll give him credit because he completed the slide tackle. And yet in that moment, and I know people are rightly going to point out that if you've left Kvara in isolation with Kjaer, that's someone else has messed up on the job. And I think that that's a fair assessment. But also, if you're Kjaer, you were happy to step up before that and make the tackle. Why are you backing off and letting him into the box? And then you make the reckless challenge right at the wrong moment. I said in the chat, I wouldn't have blamed Kvara for dragging a leg there and drawing the contact, because it's that bad a tackle that it almost deserves to be a penalty. You know, he got it so badly wrong. And Kvara is a good dribbler. Some people would say he's an explosive dribbler, but you can boost your chances in that matchup by not doing what he did, you know. And we were very lucky that Florenzi was on hand and showed a bit more defensive composure to stick a leg out and stop that being potentially a certain goal. If he gets that back onto his right and shoots, it probably goes in. We know what Maignan's been like on his near post. You mentioned before about our pace compared to Inter. Since the 13th game in the season, now the response to that might be why the 13th game. Fair point. I don't know. Gazzetta have done it, not me. We've played, obviously, 12 games. We have 29 points at 2.42 points per game. 27 goals scored, 13 conceded. Inter have played 11 because their game against Atalanta, because the Supercoppa has been deferred. 29 points, 2.64 points per game, 26 scored, 6 goals against. So when Pioli says after the game, you know, we're up there with Inter's pace, he's not technically wrong. Obviously, they'd be three ahead in terms of the points accrued in that if they go and beat Atalanta, which won't be an easy game because Atalanta are banging form at the moment. But yeah, we've been well clear of Juve, who have 24 points in that same thing, and they've only scored 17 goals because they got blanked again by Udinese last night. So yeah, it's there, but it feels too little too late to mount a Scudetto charge, I'll be honest. At this stage. What happened late on, Maignan, probably Maignan's only real save of the game was on a Di Lorenzo shot. There was a couple of half appeals for a penalty, one for a barge on Loftus-Cheek. I say a barge because I think it's a shoulder barge rather than anything malicious. That's where Liao also potentially should have taken a shot rather than feeding Loftus-Cheek down the right side of the box. But Loftus-Cheek also should probably hit it first time rather than take a touch. So we squandered a big chance there. But I personally don't think that one was a penalty. That's just...
Yeah.
People do.
About the one towards the end, right? Like it was in stoppage time? They did a little review on it? Or was that the handball?
Oh, the handball was the review late on. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one was never a penalty. Never, the flex off the other player. There was one moment where I thought we should have had a penalty, and I don't remember who got taken out, but watching it live, I mean, it looked like the dude was assaulted in real time, but slow down, and I still was like, it wasn't clearly shoulder to shoulder. It was more of like hip to hip, which, depending on how you want to angle it, can be called a penalty. Obviously, it wasn't, and it didn't matter, but, you know, in a game like this where it's a one-goal game, like,
could have killed it off, you know.
Yeah, could have made a big deal. So it was definitely interesting to see. There was another save actually that Maignan made. It was right after Simic hit the ball on our own post. It deflected to someone. I don't remember who. And they shot it, and it was probably going high, but Maignan still tipped it over the bar. So it was a really good save from him. Actually, I thought Maignan had a good game. He tends to show up when he shows up. Best in the world. I think we all agree on that. And he shows up more often than not. So, you know, that's always a plus. But, yeah, I'm trying to think if there were any other incidents in the game. And
yeah, I don't think so. I don't think so, to be honest. I agree with you that that second penalty shout, the handball one, wasn't, you know, it was far too close contact. I guess the interesting notes are, well, Jovic came on. With Giroud expected to start the game on Thursday, which we'll obviously preview in a moment. He only got 10 minutes, and I thought he might have got a bit more than that. You know, I thought we might try to do like a 60-30 and then flip it for the next game. But it looks like, you know, Giroud 80 minutes, he's going to play maybe 70 plus again on Thursday. So almost certain start for Jovic away against Monza, you'd have thought. But then Alex Jimenez came on for Pulisic and played like right wing back sort of thing. We seemed to settle into a five, but then also at times he was pushing up, pressing higher. Bit of a Salamakers sort of sub on and just cover that right side for us. That'd be nice, but yeah.
Yeah, it was a weird position. I couldn't quite figure it out, to be honest. It was almost like we were mimicking their starting formation of like a 3-5-1-1 or something. You know, it was a little strange, but I didn't hate it. Obviously, it got the job done. And I thought, again, Jovic was able to make runs that Drew just simply can't. And that led to the chance I mentioned earlier where we all got flagged offside, but he passed it to Teo and he probably should have just taken the goal or taken the shot. But and there was another opportunity like that as well that Jovic created. And I can't remember exactly what happened. I just remember seeing the Team Jovic Twitter account posted a video of all his stuff.
No way, that's so unlike them. By the way.
Great guy, but yeah, that's
yeah.
I guess I don't know anything else.
Yeah, we'll do tops and flops, because it allows a passing comment on a few other players, I suppose. And I'm gonna signal him out again. I think the top of the match, just to be very clear here, and potentially is who you're gonna pick. I think the top is Teo. I think he was pretty good in both phases, and obviously he provided the moment that won the game. I think you can make a case for Liao as well because he set up the goal. However, because we haven't mentioned him, throwing Gabir in there again, he was absolutely outstanding. And what's that song? No Help? Is it a Drake song or something? It was like that. It was No Help. Nothing from the right side was helping him out, to be honest. Yeah. excuse me. He had to make a couple of... He seems to have developed a knack, shall we say, since he came back for making these... I won't call them last ditch because that implies that he's way out of position or whatever, but making these decisive interventions deep inside the box to prevent what would be a tap-in for the other team. And he did it again in this particular game. And I thought that the equation changed for him when, obviously, we've got Calabria off for Florenzi, Kier off for Simic. They've put on Raspadori for Simeone, and they've got Politano playing on the left side, which is, on their right wing, our left side, which is technically his side. It became a lot more difficult for him, you know, to adjust and adapt, and yet rose to the occasion. I can't think of a single error that he really made. And he's just continued his fantastic form since he returned. And with Malik Chow in contention for the game in midweek, you know, he's going to have to earn back that starting spot. Well, he probably gets it from Kier, to be honest. But yeah. What about when the others come back? You know, how do you drop a player in this form? And I hope it continues, because a selection headache can only be good when we've had so many problems in that area.
Yeah. So are you picking Gabia as your top?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. I think he had a fantastic game, and I agree with everything you said, but he's not the top. Oh, before the top, one thing I did want to point out is Reiner's finally got a break. First game he hasn't played all season, and it was because he was suspended. That was the only way he was getting a rest, was to be banned from the game. So, yeah, a little interesting tidbit there, but I'm going to pick Liao. I just think that pass, only he was going to make that pass, and the only other person who probably could have made that pass for that run was Teo. You know, they have that connection. So I'm going to go with Liao. I thought he was good. He created the goal, or rather assisted the goal, had a few other opportunities. I thought he looked really strong overall. So Liao gets my top.
Yeah, very fair pick. Flop, I'm between a couple, to be honest. I think the obvious one is Kier. Mm-hmm. However, maybe this is a totally null and void point of principle, but I find it hard to pick a centre-back in a clean sheet performance, even if he did make an error that should have led to a goal, you know? So he's definitely an honourable mention for me. I think I'm going to go with Pulisic, though. That might draw some flack, but pretty damn anonymous. You know, pretty anonymous. I've seen some people, because Isaac gave him a fairly low rating in the ratings. I've seen some people in the comments sort of saying, well, he did a lot of important defensive work. That might be the case. I'd almost need to go back and watch the game ISO in on him to see if that... But I just didn't feel like he gave us much going forward, and everything good from an attacking point of view came down the left side. I also think Loftus-Cheek is perhaps partly to blame for that. He had a couple of good ball carries in the first half and then vanished again, and he once again continued this trend of making bad decisions on the ball. Yeah. So I just think that area in general left a lot to be desired. I think if one of those two is firing, we control the game a lot better. You know, we don't invite so much pressure. But it is hard to pick a... the answer is probably Kier, but I'm being a bit edgy with that because I think you're going to pick Kier.
Yeah, I know Pulisic had one good shot that was saved by Golini that probably should have went in. I don't remember how heroic of a save it was, but I remember thinking, damn, that was almost a goal. And a few other times where he was open, and like you said, Loftus-Cheek just made the wrong decision. I kept calling him Floptus-Cheek yesterday or on Sunday because he just, the last few weeks, man, he's not been there. He's just been fantastic. And then every decision he makes in the final third is wrong every single time. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, if we could just get firing on all cylinders, we'd be so unstoppable. But
I'll tell you something, right? I'll tell you something. This is my hot take. Ruben Loftus-Cheek is a striker. He's not a midfielder. Because all the good that he does is when he shoots inside the box. He carries the ball well, and he's had some performances where he stood out because of that. He can pick up the ball in our half and he can literally carry it 60, 70 yards. I acknowledge that. But it's just when he gets into that final third, like, he ain't a playmaker, let's put it that way. And it seems to be that when he gets a first-time shot, it ends up in the back of the net. He's got 4 goals in 4 games in January. Like, you can't argue with that. It happened. And he had a couple of man of the match shouts in there. But as you say, since then, he's not been there, and his decision-making's been frustrating. So take that out of the equation and just play him up front.
Yeah, I would even argue with that in January. You know, outside of the goals, like, he has not been contributing wisely, you know. And the goals, as you said, were first-time shots. You know, he was just where he needed to be and had his foot moving already. So, yeah, I'm not going to pick Loftus-Cheek, but I am going to defend Pulisic for that one. You know, you come after the American, I'll go after the Brit. So we'll do that. But it's Kier. Kier sucks, man.
Good time to move on, I think, to the Ren game, because as kind of alluded to before, we'll do a little transition here, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, Europa League. Have a Europa League video like we do for the Champions League, so I'm just going to manually press things so you guys get to see a little behind-the-scenes preview of the two steps it takes to switch. But
lovely background there. Actually looks great.
There you go.
There we go. Europa League action is back. It's been a while since we're in the Europa League. 2018-19 season, I believe, was the last time we played in the Europa League. Is that correct? Feels like it's correct. No, wait, hang on. 2020,
it was 1920. 21? No, 1920 we weren't in it.
When did we beat Bodo Glimt? And then we went on, we beat Shamrock Rovers, and we beat...
I don't know, but Hauge scored on against Napoli that season too.
It was a COVID season because we lost to Man United.
It was 1920 then, yeah.
1-0, yeah. So it might have been 2021 because it was the thicker stripes, not the thin ones. Either way, it's been a while since probably 4 years since we played Europa League. And so at the time of the draw, this seemed a much more routine opponent for us to face. You know, there were some teams to avoid in there. I don't think you want to go to Marseille second leg, and Sporting are a bit of a tough one, but you know, obviously there was some better opponents in there as well that you definitely didn't want to face. And this one felt like a bit more of an affordable tie, because Rennes at the time of the draw, I believe, were 3 points above the relegation zone, having finished sixth or seventh last season in Ligue 1. And everyone's thinking, great, into the next round we go. They've been on a tear since then. In fact, they've been on a tear in 2024 in general. If you go back to the start of the year, I will read down their results. It starts actually with a 3-1 away win against Clermont on 20th December. Then there was the break. Then they won away against Guingamp in the Cup, 7th of Jan, 2-0. 2-0 home win against Nice on the 13th of Jan, who are having a fantastic season, it must be said, under Farioli. Then they beat Marseille in the French Cup round of 32. Then they won 3-2 away at Lyon, who were in crisis, but is what it is. It's still a win. Then they beat Montpellier 2-1 at home to begin February. Then they won 6-1 against Sochaux in the last 16 in the Cup on 6th of Feb. And the most recent game was a 1-0 away win against Le Havre on Sunday. So they come into this with a perfect record in 2024. 8 wins in 9 across all comps, I believe. And they've risen up the league to... where are they now? Seventh, yes. From hovering above the relegation zone at the time of the draw to seventh now. So they're bringing 8,000 fans to San Siro. That's nice, good. Big day out for them, of course. How are you feeling about this one?
I mean, it's definitely going to be harder than I initially thought, right? Mm. When it was announced, they, I think, had lost like 5 of their last 6 or something like that. Or it might have even been worse. I don't know. But they certainly weren't a good team at that moment. And now they're moving up pretty well. Did they get a coaching change, player change? Like what's happened in January that has made this shift for them? I don't know.
So they have had a coaching change. They had a coaching change in mid-November. Bruno Genesio started the season and he got replaced by Julian Stefan. And I suppose you could say, even though it didn't make an instant difference, it's made a difference since. And now, yeah, they seem to be firing.
I mean, they're going to come into this game with a lot of confidence. They're going to be up for it. You know, it's a competition. They think they can make a run in, obviously, and as do we. So I just hope we don't underestimate them as we tend to do against some teams. It might be one of those games where we get kind of caught off guard and then we have to really show it for the second leg and put it to bed on their home turf. I'm not sure, but we'll see what happens. And I don't really have much of a preview for this one because I've never watched them in my entire life. I've never watched Stade Rennais play, so...
I mean, I'm just looking at the Ligue 1 table, and I was under the impression that like Nice and Monaco were keeping up the pressure on PSG. PSG are 11 points clear, so they've won the league again. But Rennes, yeah, if they're basically 4 points off the European spots at the moment, so they've been on a hell of a tear, as said. They went from winning 1 out of their first 6 games of the season to, as said, they won their last 5 in the league. They had a really rough run sort of from October to December as well. But yeah, they've stabilized very well. Looking at their key players, thank you Football Ref for this. Benjamin Beauregard has 6 goals and 2 assists in the league. He is their top scorer. The problem there is that he's a centre back. Fair enough. Arnaud Colomwando is the top scorer in all comps with 10 goals. He's got 5 of them in the league. Martin Terrier, who is, you know, I think he's been there for quite a while now and linked with a big move, but he's got 5 goal contributions, 3 goals, 2 assists. Amin Guiri, I don't know how to pronounce that, is there. I know he was highly rated. Arthur Tiata is there, formerly of Bologna, who we were linked with. Of course, their big player who left in the summer was Jeremy Doku, went to Man City, and he's doing quite well there. But they signed a bloke from Lorient called Enzo Lafitte, who's a midfielder, and I think he's been probably their best player this season, I'm gathering, because when he suffered an injury recently, the French press kind of made a big deal about it. So I think he's missing this game, which is, I guess, pretty important for us. who else did they sign this summer? Ludovic Blas from Nantes for 15 million. Fabian Ryder from Young Boys for 15 million. So they spent the money that they got for Doku. They sold quite a few players here. Loic Badé to Sevilla for 12. Garassi was there before. He went to Stuttgart for 9. Ugochukwu to Chelsea for 27 million. Who? Lovren and Meyer to Wolfsburg for 30 mil, Doku for 55. They got decimated, really. Like, all their best players went in the summer. And yeah, perhaps it's not a surprise that they struggled a little bit to
Where
start.
Did they finish last season? Because it sounds like they had a decent amount of star players last year.
Last season they finished fourth.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Mm. I mean, they obviously finished in the Europa League spot. Yeah, so.
They won 21 out of 38 games. They finished 5 points off Marseille in that final Champions League spot.
They did lose 12 games last season, though.
That's... Yeah, they look like the entertainers of the league here. 69 scored, 39 conceded. They seem like a pretty entertaining team. But as I said, yeah, a lot of that attacking talent has left and they struggled and they seem to have found a bit of rhythm again now.
So with their top goal scorer being a defender, that to me says don't concede a corner because we will let that go in, guaranteed. So keep an eye out for that. That's all the analysis there is. And look, guys, that's just how it goes with Europa League. This is one of the bigger teams you'll play in Europa League. We still don't watch them.
Rennes have scored in all but one of their last 16 Europa League matches, and they've won 8 of their last 12 European away games. So, that means what it means. Obviously, it goes season to season. Fabian Ryder, the guy they signed from Young Boys, is actually expected to miss the game. They're down to play a 4-4-2 with Kali Mwendo and Terrier up front. Mm. Beauregard is down as playing as a right mid in this, so... But I looked on Football Ref and it said he's a defender. So I don't know. Maybe he's just a bit of a utility man. But yeah, I'm predicting this to be a tough one, you know. I think it's always difficult when they can come and know that a draw is a good result and they just try to handle the business at home. I do think we edge it because, look, in that run of games that we've just mentioned, Nice are the only serious team that they've played. And yes, they beat them, but... You know, a lot of cup wins there and some against lower league opposition. I think we win because we have to, and we need that to simplify the job for the second leg in a week's time. But I don't think we'll keep a clean sheet. So I'm going to say 2-1 us.
I was going to go 3-2. It just sounds like, you know, we could definitely score. We know that. And I think they can as well. Yeah, that's it. I don't have any in-depth analysis here.
I've got the Gazzetta lineup from this morning. This is what they think we're going to play as. Obviously, Maignan in goal, Florenzi in for the injured Calabria, Gabia and Teo, they've got us the centre-backs because Kier is struggling with a bit of muscle discomfort. I'm not surprised after what happened. And if that is the case, then Terracciano will play at left-back, which is interesting because Terracciano didn't come off the bench during the win over Napoli and he picked... Jimenez to come on instead, and yet, you know, he's going to start him at left back in this particular game. Apparently, they've got Musa Reinders as the double pivot, although they've got Adli and Benacer in brackets for Musa's position, so there's really a doubt about that right-sided midfielder. Then Pulisic, Loftus-Cheek, Liao, Giroud, so no changes to the attacking department. That's the lineup they've got, and I think it leads us nicely into the Monza game because the only real analysis that we can give. Are we doing the background change?
I didn't know we were actually changing it right now. Sorry.
There we go. Yeah, leads us into the Monza game because I think based on that team that you got there and the couple of injuries that we picked up that mean they might not be able to play in the Europa League game, obviously they've not got Chiao as being available for this one just yet. I think we'll see multiple changes for this game against Monza on Sunday. You know, only a couple of days off in between. And then you've got the return leg to think about, and it might be that we need to go and get a result away from home if things don't go well on Thursday night. But I think we're looking at Chiao coming back in for this one. Sounds like Florenzi's going to start because Calabria will still be out. Probably Gabia alongside Chiao, and then we'll see about left back. But you're going to have to change the front, the forward group. You know, Chukwueze will be back from AFCON, which is good. Maybe he gets the nod on the right, give Pulisic a rest. Jovic up front, Okafor on the left, something like that? Or are we thinking Liao can start every game?
I mean, to me, you make the changes in Europa League, but I guess maybe that shows that we're going to take the cup seriously, or that cup competition, you know? If Chukwueze is ready to play, then yeah, Pulisic's played every single game. He probably does need a rest at this point. Giroud absolutely needs one. It should have been Jovic for Europa. Put him in for this one. I don't know if I want Liao bench just yet. I'm looking at Monza. This is a team that scored one goal in their last four games. So maybe it makes sense for us to put a little firepower up there, leave Leal, give him the opportunity to score a goal against Nice, your club. Not like he hasn't had him since September, but I don't know. I feel like if he's got a guy like Jovic up top who will make runs and look for him to make those through ball plays, it might actually benefit him and it might lead to something, and then we could get his form going again. I'm not sure, but I would like to see Chao back. I know he trained with the group before the Napoli game, obviously didn't get called up still, but he should, in theory, be back for this one, I would assume, if he's already group training as of last week and he's not going to be playing against Adorné, so it makes sense for him to come in for Monza. But I don't really have too much for that either. You know, it's just Monza's not in good form at all. Their only win in their last four has been a 1-0 win, I think, against Sassuolo. And then before that, they got smoked by Inter, and then a bunch of 0-0 draws outside of those. So, yeah, I don't have much.
They finished 11th last season, which I think we can all agree was a pretty good debut season in Serie A. You know, they actually, I think they earned a reputation for being quite a refreshing side, because so often we see teams like, this is going to sound harsh, but like Salernitana and like Empoli to an extent, Lecce, Frosinone, they come up and they just try and sort of anti-football it. Yeah. Whereas Monza, obviously they have a bit of backing there, because even though Berlusconi wasn't rich enough to own us, he was very much rich enough to own a team like that. So he backed Palladino in the market. They had some exciting players. They still do. And yeah, they finished 11th, which I think everyone would agree is a very good first season in the top flight. This season, they seem to have gone into their shell a little bit. Now, they're still 11th and they've won 7 out of 24 games. They're still 11 clear of the bottom three. So they're going to stay up. And I think that that's what's perhaps most important after such a good season like last season is to stabilize and finish in that position again, no matter how it comes. But they're just not as entertaining as they were. They've scored 21 goals in 24 games. That's less than a goal a game. That's the third least amount of goals scored in the league. Defensively, they've been quite a lot better though. They've only let in 28 and we have let in 27. So that says a lot. But yeah, I guess they just haven't been firing as much so far this season. As you said, they've had a little bit of a wobble recently in the league, having won one of their last five. Included in that last five, they got hammered 5-1 at home by Inter. They lost 3-0 away at Empoli, and that's like a really bad two back-to-back games to have. But then, yeah, as you said, they beat Sassuolo, and then they've drawn their last two games 0-0. So they're going back to keeping it tight, I think. And looking at the player stats, I guess that's not updated, does it? Colpan is the main threat. Danny Motta's pretty good. Be interesting to see if he plays Daniel Maldini just because of his knack of scoring against us. And Milan Juric went there from Verona in January. And of course, Lorenzo Colombo is there as well. Lorenzo Colombo, we mentioned in the loan report that he's actually been struggling for starts recently. That's something else to go and check out on Substack. We did a roundup of all the players we've got out on loan, including quite a big segment on CDK. But yeah, Colombo got a start on the weekend, played 60-odd minutes, I think, and didn't do anything, apparently. So But I can't see him starting again against us, to be honest, even if there is the whole parent club thing. But yeah, Colpan is the one to watch. And I think we get the job done. I think we've been okay against Monza since they came up. And I am backing us to keep a clean sheet in this, because I think they're struggling a bit going forward. Chow's return would be a boost. Therefore, 2-0.
2-0. I just wanted to look at our head-to-head. Oh, okay.
I think we won all three against them, I want to say. We won 3-0 at home this season, and we won 2-0 at home last season, and 1-0 away. I think CDK missed a really good chance to
Yeah, to including friendlies. We've played them 7 times, and we've won all 7. 1, 2, 3, 4 of them with multiple goal scored clean sheets, 2 of them 4-1 victories, and then 1 club friendly that we won 6-5 on. Penalties. So
Berlusconi trophy.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I predicted them to actually finish in the Conference League spot this season. I don't know if that's going to hit, but yeah, I don't know. I have a weird 1-1 feeling here. I don't know why, because we should be beating them, but I'm going to go 1-1 and just fingers crossed you're right and I'm wrong.
There is definitely going to be... there's the European factor in all this. You know, the how do you manage rotations, the balancing act that comes with, particularly in a game after you've travelled. This one's between the two legs, so it doesn't so much apply. But yeah, when you come back and you're on short rest after travelling somewhere... yes, we've got players returning. Hopefully we'll have all three centre-backs back by sometime next month. But how do you go about managing the energy levels? Are we going to pick up more injuries? Because even though we've only had a couple in 2024 so far, that's because we've been playing once a week mostly. And when we haven't, it's cup games where you can rotate a lot. So I think the European factor is going to be interesting because it is going to have an impact on our league form. It's just a case of how big an impact is it. Yeah, Monza, over the summer, they didn't really lose anybody. They had a few players leave on free transfers, but they invested again. They spent 12 mil to buy Pessina from Atalanta. They bought Petagna from Napoli, Caprari from Verona, Pablo Mari from Arsenal, Cranio, keeper from Cagliari, Armando Izzo they bought from Torino, and as I said, Juric before. So, I don't know, maybe they were expecting to do a little bit better than this. Obviously... Berlusconi is no longer with us, so there is that. Galliani's kind of running the ship a little bit now. But yeah, I hope
who
I'm
owns
right.
The club now? With
it's Fininvest. It's the group that used to own us, you know, by title. It's essentially the big media conglomerate and financial conglomerate that Berlusconi set up. Let's do a couple of questions and then we shall round it off. I put out the questions tweet yesterday, so I'm hoping we got a little bit on this. Okay, so the first question comes from Marco Villea. We seemed to play a little deeper against Napoli and didn't press as high as we normally do, which gave the midfield and back four less space to cover. Do you think this was a one-off tactic, or will we use this method going forward?
I think for this one, it was probably tactical. I think they saw that Kvaratskhelia was going to be playing as a trequartista, and we know Calabria shuts him down, but they obviously made that move specifically to avoid that matchup. Putting him against a guy like Kier leads to the situations that we saw with Kier getting spun, put on his ass. So I think it was tactical on both teams' part. That was our response, was to sit deeper, just be sure to defend that and have the coverage for him. But it also could have just been that we were that their formation was working, you know, that it was pinning us back. So it could be a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you said. I also think we actually did press quite high up until when we scored our goal, as mad as that sounds. But I think we were pressing too aggressively, and that's what gave them the space and probably gave them the edge in the opening 20-odd minutes before we scored. But it was with that and with quick ball movement and exploiting the space in behind that we were able to open the game. And then you're always going to be able to defend a bit more responsibly, shall we say, when you've got a goal lead. You're not going to keep going gung-ho. It doesn't make any sense. It pisses me off, like, when people say about, you know, that Bologna game where we scored a goal to go 2-1 up, 84th minute, and people saying, why didn't we go for the kill? Why didn't we keep attacking? Why do you think? You know, because we've got a goal lead. Like, what? As much as people want to... I don't know. I think they want to see us go for the jugular and stuff. And I understand that because we have done that to teams in the past. But you got to manage the moment and sort of acknowledge where we are and that keeping a clean sheet in this game was going to be a massive confidence boost. It was bend, don't break for me. And we did bend quite a bit. We gave up chances, but never once did the ball cross the goal line. And that's the most important thing. But as you rightly point out, I think it was a case of making sure there's not much space between the midfield and the defence for Kvara to operate in. Look, people call Sacchi senile and they say all kinds of things about what he says, and he contradicts himself a lot. One thing he's remained constant on, and one thing I actually agree with him on, is about the need to stay compact and about how our biggest strengths during that post-lockdown run was how the team sort of moved up and down the field as a unit and there wasn't much space between the first and last line. It helps when you've got Tomori and Kalulu and whatnot to play that higher line because of the recovery pace they've got. But I do think that it just helps the entire cohesion if you're not stretched massively across the pitch. And we've seen that vanish a little bit, maybe because of injuries, maybe because we realised it wasn't sustainable, or maybe there was a couple of defeats in particular where it got exposed. But Yeah, I think compactness is key. And I just think in that game, it was horses for courses. We sort of adjusted to what they did as counter moves quite well. Hirula Milanista asks, is the Scudetto over and done with? Inter don't have to lose to drop points. That's a fair point. They've got Champions League games, the derby, plus they play Atalanta, Bologna, Napoli and Lazio. And they've got games against teams battling to stay out of relegation zones like Lecce, Udinese, Sassuolo and Empoli.
Yeah, I still think it's probably over, unfortunately. Look, never say never. You know, anything could happen, especially at this point in the season. Those are all very good points that you bring up with them having Champions League. You know, they were in the final last season. I think they'd like to replicate that at the very least. I don't think they will, but they might, you know. They could go forward there and really invest in the Champions League, maybe take a back seat in the league a little bit. One thing from them we haven't seen is their depth. You know, they haven't had many injuries, so they've been able to field the same players time and time again. So with the Champions League, we might see some of the depth, and it might not be up to par. That could cause issues. I think they are playing a lot of teams that are fighting for salvation and top four. So those are also very good points. However, I will say we've lost five consecutive derbies, one of them being 5-1 this season. And we were in hot form. We were the team on top, three games, three wins at that point. So I don't know if the derby is really something that they're looking at like, we should be concerned. You know, if anyone should be looking in that saying, here we go again, it's us.
Yeah.
Now how that works mentality wise, maybe they're comfy and we got a chip on our shoulder because a lot of our players have only been in that one derby and they want to get that one back. You know, it was still, that was game four. So a lot of the players weren't settled in. Pulisic obviously has played just about every single game since. So he's a lot more well in tune with what needs to be done than he was that game. Same with Loftus-Cheek, same with Reinders. You know, so we'll see what happens. I'm not sure. I don't think we win it. I don't think we win the Scudetto. We might get second at this rate. It looks like Juve is slipping off. But to me, the thing that sealed the deal was Inter 1-0 versus Juventus. That's yeah. Where I was like, okay. You know, if that was a draw, maybe. But it is still only a three game season, but that's a hard ask when they've lost one game all season, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate because our pace isn't really that bad. But I don't know how you, I think the points that you bring up are, more hope rather than expectation of what's going to happen. And, you know, as you mentioned, they've lost one of 23 games. They've won 19 out of 23 games. Look, I just think that we can get ahead of ourselves after winning the games that we've won a little bit. I think that performance that we had against Napoli, if we play like that in the return derby, it will not be good enough. The Inter will beat us comfortably again. We have so much to improve on between now and that game in April. And who knows that the gap might not be widened before then. You know, we're talking about a team here who scored 55 goals and let in 12. We've conceded over double the amount of goals that they have, and we've scored less than them. They're just on a heater. Like, everything's clicked for them. And the two games that you look at as maybe potential turning points, as you said, the Juve game, top of the table clash, will they buckle under pressure, especially if they go behind? No, they won 1-0, and it was quite a controlling performance. And then the Roma game, Roma on a bit of a rise under De Rossi, and they actually trailed in that game at halftime. And you're thinking, okay, maybe we're going to start to see that typical February wobble from them. Scored three goals in the second half and won 4-2. So it's like you just can't stop these guys. And you look at the fixtures that are to come. Look, there's still quite a lot of games. What is there, 13, 14 games left of the season still? So you're in that phase where everyone's still got to play each other again. Like, it's not like we're looking at the last five games of the season and they're playing, you know, four of the top seven or something. Like, everyone's still got to play each other, really. You mentioned the Atalanta, Bologna, Napoli, Lazio games. I mean, okay, they can actually afford to drop points in two of them or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe all of them, who knows? But, like, it's such a tall order. I think the Atalanta game will be tough because Atalanta are banging form. And perhaps
have to play Atalanta again. They beat us twice this season, you know? Like, there's no guarantee that we go on a tear either. And most of those teams mentioned, for them to beat, well, look at their last five games in order. Lazio, Napoli, Fiorentina, Juventus, Roma. They won all five. They conceded two goals in that stretch.
Yeah, this they're on.
I mean, look, yeah, they're a super team right now.
Yeah, they're on for a season that's like the Juve ones of the mid 2010s and stuff. And it pains me to say it, but you've almost got to credit it, because there were some people who didn't even have them finishing in the top four this season, or some people who thought that they'd just drop off compared to. But Inzaghi's the best coach in the league at the moment. They've got a very well drilled system. They've got plug and play players deep for squad. The positions that they have. Yeah, I just, it's working for them. And you know, it's pissing me off a bit, because you look at like Mkhitaryan, well, at least this is his last season, then they'll have to find another midfield starter. Well, they're signing Samardzic on a free. They're signing Zielinski on a free. And Fratesi's there ready to step in as well. And
they got Mehdi Taremi as well.
Taremi's come in, yeah, so they can probably ship Arnautovic out, or Alexis Sanchez, or maybe Sanchez
is leaving.
Yeah. So they're finding deals to just keep the squad.
Every free transfer
level
they've made has improved their squad in the last few years. It's pretty impressive, you know. They lost 12 league games last season. How much of that was down to Onana just being bad?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, United's still struggling with him, and Sommer came in and is killing it. So, yeah, that's a tough one. Next question.
Mike Golisano, before the Europa League resumes, how far do you think we'll get, and what will prevent us from winning it? Liverpool is my answer. Or Bayer Leverkusen, one of those two.
Yeah, one of them. Those are the two. Look, I'd say we're top three to win it, but behind those two, or in a mixture with them. I don't know. Leverkusen just beat Bayern 2-0. They still haven't lost 3-0. A game this season. 3-0, wow. They still haven't lost a game this season. Leverkusen is a force to be reckoned with right now. That's a team to watch. Hopefully they get Liverpool next round, and it's Clash of the Titans, and one of them drops for us, and then we could go on. But yeah, I don't want to match up with them until the final. You know, I think we have a good chance of getting to the final. I guess Roma's in there as well. We'd have to beat them again, but those are our options.
It's Liverpool and Leverkusen, who actually the bookmakers have us third favourites behind those two, and I think that's fair. No disputes from me. Liverpool obviously are not.
Are they top of the league right now?
It's a bit of them, Arsenal, and City are all in and around.
They're number
one
right now. Yeah,
right. Yeah, and you can't turn your nose up at that. Like that's a very good achievement if they were to go out on Klopp's last season. That's another thing about them as well. Klopp's last season, you know, they're going to want to try get the treble, not a proper treble, but you know, they can still win the League Cup, Europa League, and the Premier League, which would be massive for them. The players are going to have a bit more energy in the tank. And then Leverkusen, yeah, they're flying. They look like potentially ending Bayern's run of dominance. Those are the two. How far do we get? I think until we draw one of them two. So the draw's got to be kind to us. But I want to say that we probably get to the quarterfinals. I think maybe that's when we run into a very tough draw.
Yeah.
Look, if we can get a fully fit squad back and a healthy squad, and people are going to come back at this and say, oh, what a defeatist mentality. You don't think that we could beat a Bundesliga team over two legs, or you know, you don't fancy us against. I don't, to be honest. I just don't think we're as good as them as a team yet. And I think it's, you know, we had the Champions League journey last season, and we had a bit of a fortunate draw in the sense that we played a Spurs side who were in a bit of chaos, and we played Napoli who we did a job on. And I think this Europa League run could teach us a lot as well, because it's not a guarantee that you drop in there and go too far. It's not like you finish third in the group, great, we're going to go to the final in Dublin. Not necessarily the case. So I guess every journey is a learning experience. Final question. Loco Poco Moco. Nice name. How the hell is Pioli breaking all these records, and how will his tenure be remembered? Now, the record that I believe that he's referring to, he actually equaled Arrigo Sacchi for the fifth most games taken charge of as Milan manager. He got to his 220th game. So obviously against Rennes, he will pass Arrigo Sacchi. He's behind Lidholm, Capello, Nerio Rocco, and Carlo Ancelotti. He's still got 200 to go to catch Ancelotti. So I think we can just about rule that one out. But yeah, I mean, he does keep ticking up.
The other big one was second fastest coach to reach 100 wins for us behind Ancelotti. And he was only a few games behind him on that. And remember, we dropped points in two or three games where we were up 2-0 at halftime. So, and with those, he would have broken Ancelotti's record for fastest coach to win 100 wins or reach 100 wins. Yeah, a lot of that comes down to just, I genuinely believe we have the strongest team in the league. I'm going to just say that. We don't play like it, and that's probably Pioli's fault. But I thought we had the best team in the league last season, even when Napoli had their tear. I thought we still, like for like, the best team. I mean, we smoked them three times consecutively, so make of that what you will. This year, it's probably a lot closer, and I won't complain if anyone says no, Inter have the best team. I think that's fair to say. But I think Pioli holds us back a lot, and the team carries him a lot. You know, a lot of his tenure was relying on the fact that Zlatan came in and revolutionized the team. Not revolutionized, but just brought us back to the level. You know, before Zlatan came in, Pioli was teetering with being sacked very quick. You know, he came in to replace Giampaolo after seven games. No one was excited. Pioli out was turning number one worldwide before he even was announced. A lot of people don't remember that. And he didn't do well. You know, it went exactly as you thought it would go up until January of 2019. Zlatan came in on a free right after we lost 5-0 at Atalanta. Then the COVID break happened, and the team was kind of just able to work together and do their thing. And then we finished the season unbeaten, and a lot of that was Zlatan. He was scoring two goals a game, and he carried that into the season after, where we got second. And yeah, we were just on a tear under Zlatan. Obviously, the Scudetto winning season still had Zlatan. And then things kind of collapsed a little bit last season, but we managed to get top four because of the Juventus point deduction. So there's just been a lot of things that have gone in his favor, a lot of lucky things, a lot of unpredictable things. I don't want to discredit him entirely. He's obviously done a job, right? Like, you can't say he had nothing to do with this form. But yeah, I think a lot of chips just fell perfectly for Pioli to break a lot of these records. He's also made a lot of negative records. First manager to lose five derbies in a row. The largest derby defeat ever earlier this season. I can't remember. There's a bunch of other negative records. So Pioli is breaking records left and right, good ones and bad ones, you know. But for all that said, you know, we are still on our third best season of all time, point wise, for the 3 points in a game era.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that, the fact that we're on 52 points after 24 games. We've actually now done that three times under him, and that's only been bettered twice in terms of how many points we're on at this stage of the season. So, yeah, the pace is there. I'm not going to dwell too much on this because I agree with pretty much everything you've just said, but I go devil's advocate on our website. I wrote basically something about how Pioli's tenure will be remembered. And basically, I think a lot of these records are longevity. When you stay at a club for half a decade who has been known, certainly, even in the 90s, even in the glory days of the 90s, we actually changed manager quite a bit. Then in the 2000s, we have Ancelotti, and that's why he's got that record, and it's probably going to remain untouched for a long, long time. But then obviously what followed in the 2010s was a lot more instability. If you stay at Milan for 5 years, you are going to be going past quite a lot of coaches. That's just what happens. A lot of these records are positive, and I think that shows that we've maintained a pretty high level throughout. I think he deserves credit for that. It's not necessarily the amount of wins or the amount of points or anything like that that I think will define his era. I think it will be the games that we lost. Even though there might not have been many of them, they were always the defining games that we lost, unfortunately. You know, those two legs against Inter in the semis were embarrassing, to be honest. We've been knocked out early in the Coppa Italia pretty much every single time, and those are generally a pretty easy path to a trophy or at least a final. Even think back to the Europa League game we mentioned against Manchester United. You know, we had some injuries, but we outplayed them over two legs and we lost. You know, but that should have been our statement win. We're here, kind of thing. Champions League, obviously, we've been dumped out in the group stage twice. This season, we've lost to Inter, we lost to Juve, we lost to Dortmund, and at home, and these are the sort of precipice moments of the season where it's like, if we win, then you know, everything's feeling really good again, but it didn't, and you feel like you're descending back into a crisis. So I just think, I think everyone will judge him and say, thank you very much for everything that you did do, but it'll almost be a case of being remembered more for what he didn't do, you know, mm-hmm. and make of that what you will.
Yeah, I think history is kind to people, you know. The next generation's going to become fans long after Pioli's 10 years over, and they're going to go through, do the research on the club and say, oh, Stefano Pioli, he was a really good manager. This guy was one of the greats. And that's probably how he's going to be remembered because of these records. You know, the people who are here are going to probably remember the downfall, the bad sides, the bad times. But the next people, they won't see that. Like, we weren't here for Sacchi's reign. I'm sure there were plenty of down moments under him too.
There were. When he came back, it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, look at Ancelotti, for example. I mean, everybody knows him, rightly so, as a legendary and winning Milan manager. In fact, there's still some people who'd have him back in a heartbeat now, you know, for a couple more years. But I think you can make a really strong argument that we underachieved in his reign, you know? We won the two Champions League titles, and for that we'll be forever grateful, but we also bottled a final that we were 3-0 up in. I think we won the league once under him, the Coppa Italia once, and it's, you know, you remember more for the Champions League triumphs rather than any kind of domestic dominance. But yeah, it's an interesting one. We'll wrap it up there. Look at the time. We've gone beyond an hour again. Thank you very much for watching, everybody. We'll be back next week with a couple of games to recap and a couple of games to preview. But I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Cheers for joining, AJ.
Yep, glad to be here. My attendance is sporadic at best now, so hopefully I'm here next week. If not, you know, you'll see Madison.
Yeah, looking forward to that. See you in a week's time, everyone.
Gol! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio cuore!